The World Health Organization says almost 26 million people have been affected by the recent quakes in Turkey and Syria. Russia calling on NATO to hold an emergency summit over recent findings about September explosions at the Nord Stream gas pipelines. It's good to have you with us. Now, beginning with our top story, it's 6 days since a powerful quake hit Turkey and Syria. More than 28,000 people have been confirmed dead, and the death toll still keeps rising. Officials and medics put the toll in Turkey at over 24,600, and in Syria, above 3,500. The UN aid chief, who has visited Turkey's quake-hit area, says the number will double or even more. He says the earthquake was the worst to hit the region in a century. Tens of thousands of rescue workers are scouring flattened neighborhoods despite freezing weather. The World Health Organization says almost 26 million people have been affected by the quake. Mohamed Ali joined us a short while ago for an update on the relief efforts undergoing in Syria.
Now, we know that many countries have been trying to help Syria since this earthquake hit the country. Up till now, more than 60 airplanes coming from over 20 countries have landed in various Syrian airports, loaded with humanitarian aid, on top of which, of course, those countries are Syria's allies and friends like Russia and Iran. Humanitarian aid is being distributed as much as soon as possible by the Syrian government, the Syrian Arab Red Crescent, and even NGOs and ordinary people have been trying to help as much as they can, exerting efforts, whether providing what they can with the food and medicine, or even trying to distribute alongside with the Syrian government and help those affected. However, more help is needed, but unfortunately, there are the sanctions on Syria by the United States and Western countries were not lifted. Nothing was probably offered from them, except for just yesterday, we heard that there were two airplanes coming from Italy that landed in Beirut, loaded with humanitarian aid for Syria. But search operations continue despite the fact that it has been 6 days, and hopes are fading for finding anyone alive still over there. But dozens of buildings have collapsed totally, creating this disastrous situation in Syria.
Well, also our correspondent in Istanbul, Rashan Saglam, has the latest about the situation in the quake-hit areas in Turkey.
It's the sixth day and people are still coming out from under the debris alive. We still have hope, and of course the rescuers still have hope. Just an hour ago, a man was rescued in Gaziantep city, and he is a 60-year-old man. He is handicapped, and he was rescued alive. So this still gives us some hope. Usually after the seventh day, people or the rescuers would stop looking for people or living under the debris. However, it is still working. And when speaking to experts, they said that this is due to the cold weather. Usually when it is in the summer or when the weather is hotter, it is harder for people to survive under the debris. But people are still coming out alive, which gives us a hope. If we want to speak about the logistically, the Hatay airport will be back, as per officials, to working next Sunday. As we know, the Hatay airport was severely damaged and is out of order now. It's not working, and it is very important for it to work again so that the medical support and any kind of support, nutritional support, can reach the Hatay area, because all the roads leading to Hatay are cut. The medical teams are using the small roads, which is taking them a lot longer to reach that area. So with the airport working again, it will facilitate the work of the aid people and the medical teams better.
Iranian people from all walks of life have held rallies in many cities across the nation to commemorate the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Salman Gujri was also there at the venue of the event and filed a report.
Iranians from different walks of life have participated in the commemoration rally from all parts of the metropolitan Tehran to the iconic Azadi Square to mark and celebrate the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution and renew allegiance with the ideals of the revolution.
The Iranian nation toppled the US-backed Pahlavi regime 44 years ago, ending 2,500 years of monarchy in the country. The Islamic Revolution, led by Imam Khomeini, established a new political system based on Islamic values and democracy.
The celebration was held in Tehran and over 1,400 cities and 38,000 villages around the Islamic country.
We are here to support our country, and we are here to tell the U.S. to back off so that we can make more improvements in our country. We're going to support this government, this country forever. We're going to support our supreme leader. So you just have to stop interfering in our affairs. And we want to say that down with the U.S. because you've been the cruelest country in the world.
We celebrate the 44th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution to show the world that despite all riots and plots hatched by the enemies, our Islamic Revolution is strong and powerful. We love our leader and the Islamic Revolution and are ready to sacrifice our life for the ideals of our revolution.
Addressing crowds of people at Azadi Square, Iran's president, Ibrahim Raisi, said West's policy of imposing sanctions and maximum pressure on the Islamic Republic has failed, thanks to the resistance of the Iranian nation.
West's policy imposing sanctions and maximum pressure on the Islamic Republic has failed, thanks to the resistance of the Iranian nation. The United States and its allies failed to stop the Iranians from making progress. The Iranians managed to make the enemy's plots futile. The West, the U.S. in particular, stands accused of human rights violations by waging wars in countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Yemen. The West must be held accountable for its crimes in the region.
The demonstrators underlined the necessity of preserving national unity and avoiding any measure that would foment division and sedition in the country. Analysts believe that after 44 years since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, and despite different forms of conspiracies against the Islamic establishment, Iran has now been turned into a beacon of hope for freedom seekers and the oppressed nations of the world. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Belgian prosecutors have charged another member of the European Parliament with corruption in an influence-peddling scandal that has shaken the body. According to Belgian media, the lawmaker, identified as a specialist, Mark Tarabella, was detained on Friday. His other charges are money laundering and membership in a criminal organization. The suspect has reportedly denied the charges. The European Parliament is located in the Belgian capital, Brussels. The country's authorities also arrested four people in connection with the so-called Qatargate scandal in December. Prosecutors say that Qatar gave them gifts and money to influence decision-making before the country was picked as FIFA World Cup host. Now, Russia calling on NATO to hold an emergency summit over recent findings about the September explosions at the Nord Stream gas pipelines. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova says that there is plenty of evidence obtained by journalists on the blasts and the motive behind them. On Wednesday, American investigative journalist Seymour Hersh said that U.S. Navy divers destroyed the pipelines in the orders of President Joe Biden. The White House dismissed the report as utterly false. Nord Stream pipelines send gas from Russia to Germany. Now, Moscow confirming staging a massive attack on Ukraine's critical energy facilities. The Russian Defense Ministry has spoken of major aid and missile strikes on the power infrastructure of Ukraine's military-industrial complex on Friday. The ministry did not elaborate on the facilities hit. As a result of the strike, the transport of foreign weapons and ammunition by rail to battlegrounds in Ukraine has been blocked. Ukrainian officials say that Russia has hit power facilities in six regions with missiles and drones, causing blackouts across the country. Ukraine has been bracing for a new Russian offensive ahead of the war anniversary on February 24th. Moscow denies targeting civilians and says the facilities it attacks support Kiev's war machine. Washington's military support for Kiev has always been a heated debate in U.S. Congress ever since the war broke out between Moscow and Kiev. Now, many have called for an immediate halt to such a support and urged the warring sides to negotiate a ceasefire.
The Russia-Ukraine war is about to enter its first anniversary within days. So far, thousands of people have been killed and many more displaced. Now, after nearly 1 year, the war has turned into a bigger conflict, an encounter, rather, between the West and Russia. Many countries, including the U.S., Germany, France, and the U.K., have been fanning the flames of the conflict by sending military aids worth billions of dollars. In the U.S., there has been a long debate among politicians on whether to support Kiev in its war with Russia. Some back the U.S. support for Ukraine. Others, however, take a different stance. Among them is Congressman Matt Gaetz. The Republican lawmaker has introduced a bill which calls for an immediate end to U.S. military and financial support for Ukraine. The resolution also urges the warring sides to negotiate a ceasefire.
How much more for Ukraine? Is there any limit? Which billionth dollar really kicks in the door? Which red line we set will we not later cross?
Throughout the war, Gaetz has been critical of U.S. support for Ukraine and has previously called for an end to the policy.
I will not vote for one more dollar to Ukraine. I will not vote for one more piece of materiel to Ukraine. We are far too entangled in this conflict. I believe we have extended this conflict. And I call on the Secretary of Defense to declassify the Inspector General report on the compliance with our existing regulations regarding chain of custody with materiel going to another country.
Gaetz has also taken a jab at President Joe Biden. In a statement on his resolution, Gaetz said President Joe Biden must have forgotten his prediction from March 2022, suggesting that arming Ukraine with military equipment will escalate the conflict to World War III. He added America is in a state of managed decline, and it will exacerbate if we continue to hemorrhage taxpayer dollars toward a foreign war. We must suspend all foreign aid for the war in Ukraine and demand that all combatants in this conflict reach a peace agreement immediately. Gaetz's resolution has so far received 10 co-sponsors, including Andy Biggs from Arizona, Lauren Boebert from Colorado, Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia, Anna Paulina Luna from Florida, Thomas Massey from Kentucky, and Mary Miller from Illinois.
The U.S. fiscal budget for 2023 includes more than $800 billion for military purposes. Many of the states argue that a big portion of that money, which consists of sending military hardware to Ukraine, could be allocated to fulfill other essential needs, including health care and education.
The bill introduced by Gaetz notes that the U.S. has already authorized over $110 billion to spend on the war in less than a year. The resolution comes after a series of escalations of U.S. military aid, including M1 Abrams tanks. It also comes at a time when Ukraine is seeking fighter jets from the U.S. and its allies. Each escalation risks a direct clash between Russia and NATO, which could quickly spiral into a nuclear war. But where does this rising U.S. opposition to continue aid to Ukraine come from? If U.S. taxpayers knew that half the income tax dollars that they sent to the Internal Revenue Service every year was being spent on weapons, war, and war preparation, political support for such programs might significantly decline. As a matter of fact, no agency of the federal government communicates to taxpayers how Congress spends their money. Purchasing weapons and military services with taxpayer dollars has always been, and continues to be, a highly profitable endeavor for defense contractors. But it is in a real war, like as in Ukraine, that such profiteering truly thrives. President Joe Biden's budget proposal to Congress for 2023 included $813 billion for the Pentagon and military expenditures. This is more than half the income taxes citizens send to the federal government each year, and a more than $31 billion increase over the already bloated fiscal year 2022 Pentagon budget. It is also more than the defense budgets of the eight next biggest military spenders put together, including Russia, China, and India. One of the components of the $782 billion Pentagon budget is for the purchase of new nuclear-armed submarines, even though the U.S. already has 14 lethal Ohio-class submarines, each capable of launching 192 nuclear warheads. Canceling two of these unnecessary and provocative new weapon systems would save more than $10 billion. All in all, what seems to be a non-negotiable is the U.S. taxpayers' money, which could and can be allocated to other needs. What seems to be clear, not only to American taxpayers, but to the whole world, is that the U.S. military-industrial complex is the only one who benefits most from such aid.
And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The second phase of the revolution statement addressed to the Iranian nation on the occasion of the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The adversaries of the revolution are strongly motivated in their efforts to spread distortions and lies about the past and even the present, exploiting money and all the necessary tools for it. The bandits of thought, creed, and awareness are ample. The truth cannot be heard from the enemy and his troops. The Islamic Revolution and the establishment that rose from it started from scratch. Firstly, everything was against us. The corrupt regime of Taghut Pahlavi tyranny, which in addition to its dependence and corruption, tyranny and being coup-based, was the first royal regime in Iran that was brought to power by the foreigners rather than by the force of sword. The government of the United States and some other Western governments or the extremely chaotic situation inside Iran, and the shameful backwardness in science and technology, politics, spirituality, and any other virtue.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Secondly, there was no precedent experienced before us, and the path ahead of us had not been walked. Obviously, Marxist uprisings and the like could not represent a role for a revolution that emerged from the head of the Islamic faith and knowledge. Islamic revolutionaries began without an example and experience, and the combination of a republic and Islam, and the means for the formation and progress of it were not achieved except through the divine guidance as well as the luminous heart and the great thought of the late Imam Khomeini. As this marked the first brilliance of the revolution. Then the revolution of the Iranian nation transformed the bipolar world of that day into a three-polar world. And then, with the fall and disappearance of the Soviet Union and its allies, and the emergence of a new poles of power, the new dichotomy of Islam and the arrogant front became a prominent phenomenon of the contemporary world, and the focal point that is attracting the world's attention. On the one hand, the aspirated look of the oppressed nations, freedom-seeking movements, and some independence-seeking states of the world fixated on it. And on the other hand, it was screened by resentful and malicious eyes of the world's bullying regimes and blackmailer thugs.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
A devastating 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck southeastern Turkey and northwestern Syria early on Monday. The deadly quake and a string of aftershocks have killed thousands of people in both countries and injured more. Hundreds of buildings in both Syria and Turkey have been reduced to rubble. Rescue workers are still working in freezing temperatures to find those still trapped under debris. While Turkey has been aided by its allies and Western partners to cope with the crisis, aid is trickling to sanctions hit Syria. Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad has highlighted Syria's need for humanitarian assistance, warning that the US sanctions have worsened the circumstances as the illegal bans have prevented the delivery of everything to the country. The catastrophe of the earthquake that struck Syria is great, and what has increased its depth is the difficult circumstances that the country has been going through for the past 12 years as it's fighting terrorism and its supporters. What exacerbated the tragedy and catastrophe was the sanctions imposed by the United States and Western countries on Syria. The Syrian top diplomat further said that Damascus had appealed to the member states of the United Nations, the General Secretariat of the organization, its relevant agencies and funds, the International Committee of the Red Cross, and other humanitarian action partners from international, governmental and non-governmental organizations to extend a helping hand and support Syria's efforts to confront the crisis.
You know, given that the war situation and economic, financial, unilateral, illegal, unilateral, inhumane Western sanctions imposed on Syria, at the same time when the U.S. Is imposing, and with its Western allies, imposing almost a blockade around Syria.
As Syria is reeling from the aftermath of the deadly earthquakes, the United States is working with partners to provide earthquake relief in Syria, but will stand firm against working with Syria's legitimate government headed by President Bashar al-Assad. The United States has refused normalization of relations with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad or any direct reconstruction aid.
Lots of the airplane, cargo airplane, refused to land on Syrian airports because of the American and European sanctions. So even those countries who want to send humanitarian assistance, they cannot use the aeroplane cargo because of the sanctions.
Washington listed Syria as a state sponsor of terrorism in 1979, but since the beginning of the imposed war on Syria in 2011, the United States and its Western allies have imposed a number of economic sanctions and restrictions on Syria. U.S. sanctions intensified with the passing of the CISA Act in 2019, which was signed by former President Donald Trump. The sanctions have severely affected the Syrian economy, especially its construction, finance and energy sectors, and complicated the reconstruction effort.
The hurdles we have, if I talk about the area under government control, we don't have an access problem in terms of authorizations, but we have an access problem in terms of the capacity of the infrastructure to authorize and to enable us to do it. I mean, this means we might have to repair a few roads here and there. And we're not the only one. The government is also working on that. But we are in a situation where it was already difficult to do that before. And now we are in a situation where we don't have any other option than doing it.
Syria has been in the throes of foreign-backed militancy since March 2011. While the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group was crushed by the Syrian government, militant outfits continue to hold sway in some parts of the country under the patronage of Western powers. The United States has also established several military bases in northern Syria in a bid to help the terrorists there. Meanwhile, Iran has sent several batches of humanitarian aid to Syria to help the Arab country deal with the aftermath of the devastating earthquakes. The latest batch of aid included food, blankets and carpets. Iran will send more humanitarian supplies to Syria in the coming days. Iran has urged the international community to put pressure on the US to lift its cruel sanctions on Syria to facilitate aid deliveries. The Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement has also sent convoys of humanitarian aid to earthquake-affected areas in Syria.
One of Joe Biden's promises during his presidential campaign was to immediately move to end all support for the Saudi-led coalition's war in Yemen. In February 2021, Biden stood at a podium at the State Department and proclaimed that the war in Yemen must end. Biden underlined the humanitarian crisis as the key reason the United States withdrew support.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
An investigation by the Government Accountability Office found that the United States is training the Saudi-led coalition and the U.S.'s troops on the ground in Yemen. Biden confirmed that the United States has troops in Yemen in a letter to Congress in June last year. Simply put, he lied to the world when he claimed that the United States was withdrawing U.S. troops for the war in Yemen in 2021. On the contrary, the United States is making billions of dollars from the war in Yemen, as 200,000 have been killed from direct violence. According to data acquired from the Defense Security Cooperation Agency, between 2015 and 2021, the United States sent $54.2 billion in weapons and services to Saudi Arabia and the UAE. In addition, the Department of Defense provided $644 million for military training to Saudi Arabia and the UAE, almost entirely through the Foreign Military Sales Program. The DoD uses acquisition and cross-servicing agreements to bill nations for logistical support and items ranging from flying hours, fuel, and bombs. Saudi Arabia paid the United States $157 million in flying hours, and the UAE paid $104 million for flying hours since the Saudi-led intervention began in Yemen in 2015. The United States billed Saudi Arabia and the UAE for $319 million in acquisition and cross-servicing agreements for logistical support. Also, the United States sent $18.6 billion in missiles, $6.2 billion in aircraft, $3.3 billion in ships, and $2.8 billion in military training to attack one of the poorest nations in the world. The United States is well aware that the coalition is not fighting an advanced military in Yemen. Billions of dollars have been spent destroying the country, killing hundreds of thousands of people. The UN Security Council approved a resolution to blockade Yemen since 2015 to prevent arms from flooding the conflict. However, the embargo has only succeeded in starving the Yemenis into famine. On a February 9th phone call in 2022 with the King of Saudi Arabia, Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, Biden assured him that the United States would continue to support the war in Yemen. The phone call came 1 year after Biden lied to the world and announced that the U.S. was withdrawing its support of the war in Yemen. The Defense Security Cooperation Agency's Defense Institute of International Legal Studies conducted training at the Saudi War College that focused on the law of armed conflict, including laws related to air-to-ground targeting in May 2017, April 2018, June 2019, and May 2020. The DoD claims they are not responsible for civilian deaths because they provided the Saudis with training to avoid civilian casualties. According to the Yemen Data Project, over 23,000 Saudi-led coalition airstrikes since March 2015 have led to thousands of civilian casualties. A Yemeni human rights organization has warned that the Saudi-led war on Yemen, as well as the crippling siege in the impoverished Arab country, could result in the death of thousands of children suffering from cancer. Intisaf, Organization for Women's and Children's Rights, said in a statement on the occasion of World Cancer Day that more than 3,000 Yemeni children who have developed cancer as a result of Saudi aggression and the tight sea, land, and air blockade on the country are now at significant risk of death. The rights group criticized the international organizations and other relevant bodies for neglecting Yemeni cancer patients over the past years. Intisaf added that the incidence of leukemia is increasing among Yemeni children, saying the cases of kids suffering from blood cancer have soared from 300 to 700 in the capital Sana'a due to the use of internationally banned weapons supplied by the United States and the United Kingdom and used by Saudi-led coalition in Yemen. Approximately 1,000 children are also believed to have contracted leukemia in other Yemeni regions due to the same reasons. The rights organization pointed to the dire shortage of medicine needed for the treatment of patients diagnosed with cancer because of the Saudi-led military onslaught and siege, stating that many children lose their lives as a result. The human rights organization noted that the economic hardships caused by the ongoing military aggression and blockade have prevented minor cancer patients from seeking treatment abroad, calling for the opening of Sana'a International Airport for humanitarian purposes. It finally held Saudi Arabia and its allies fully responsible for all crimes and violations being perpetrated against the Yemeni nation, especially children, urging the international community to bear the legal and humanitarian responsibility for the violations against the civilians. Saudi Arabia, in collaboration with its Arab allies and with arms and logistics support from the U.S. and other Western states, launched a devastating war in Yemen in March 2015. The objective was to crush the popular Ansarullah resistance movement, which has been running state affairs in the absence of a functional government in Yemen, and reinstalled the Riyadh-friendly regime of Abd Rabu Mansur Hadi. The Saudi-led coalition has failed to achieve any of its objectives, leaving hundreds of thousands of Yemenis dead and spawning the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian is on the final leg of his trip to Latin America, where he has met with a number of high-ranking officials in an effort to boost bilateral and multilateral relations. Cuba was the latest destination of Amir Abdollahian, where he met with Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel. During the meeting, they discussed matters of mutual interest at bilateral and international levels. The top Iranian diplomat voiced his country's categorical support for Havana while condemning sanctions on Cuba and foreign intervention in its internal affairs. Díaz-Canel, for his part, said despite all the existing pressures, Cuba is determined to cooperate with friendly countries and work with them to eliminate obstacles and challenges lying ahead. The Cuban president criticized U.S. unilateralism and said that his country has earned political independence at a high price and would preserve it. Amir Abdollahian also met with his Cuban counterpart, Bruno Rodriguez Parrilla. Both diplomats wrapped the U.S. sanctions policy against others, including Iran and several South American countries, saying such a policy is doomed to fail. Before Cuba, the top Iranian diplomat paid a visit to Venezuela, which is maintaining strong bilateral relations with Tehran. During a meeting between Amir Abdullahian and Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, the two sides discussed ways to strengthen cooperation further in various fields, including energy. They also called for heightened vigilance in the face of U.S.-led pressure and bullying. Maduro also pointed to common challenges being faced by Venezuela and Iran. Amir Abdullahian also traveled to Nicaragua as part of his Latin American trip. In a meeting with President Daniel Ortega, he condemned all lawful sanctions imposed by the U.S. and certain Western countries on Iranian individuals and entities. He stressed, however, that the Islamic Republic has managed to move forward despite the coercive measures designed to stop the country's progress. Amir Abdullahian voiced Tehran's eagerness for closer cooperation in various fields, saying Iran sets no limits to the promotion of cooperation with Nicaragua. Ortega, for his part, highlighted shared concerns of Tehran and Managua. He said that the two countries have a common enemy, adding that what Iran fought and defeated in 1979 was the same Nicaraguans rose up against in the same year. Amir Abdullahian's visit to Latin America puts under the spotlight the significance of his meeting with officials there. One of the most important points highlighted by almost all leaders was that the ongoing developments in Latin America and elsewhere in the world are creating new opportunities for multilateralism. That was particularly underlined by the top Iranian diplomat, who dismissed unilateralism as an obsolete doctrine on the global stage. He stressed that unilateralism cannot respond to developments and changes taking place worldwide. In the case of Iran and Venezuela, the officials of the two OPEC members found a common ground to solidify their relations to deal with a common enemy, the United States, which has come up with crippling sanctions against them for years. Standing against the U.S. and Western imperialism was another topic of discussion during the Iranian official's visit. That was underscored in Daniel Ortega's comments, where he said the enemies of global peace and tranquility have maintained their imperialistic policies and considered the whole world, not just Latin America, as their backyard. Ortega, however, expressed hope that imperialism cannot last any longer. On sanctions, Latin American leaders echoed the stance of the Iranian foreign minister, who called such measures terrorist threat being used by imperial powers as leverage. They stressed the need for boosting cooperation in trade and technology, among other things, to overcome those curbs. It seems that shared challenges have brought these countries together to push against U.S. hegemony. And what could make a difference? Moving away from the U.S. dollar, establishing a common currency, enhancing bilateral and multilateral trade. It seems that an oriental shift is largely taking place in today's world. That is visible in countries on the African continent that are trying to enhance ties with the East, namely Russia and China, and Latin American nations that are standing firm against U.S. unilateralism. All these point to their rejection of Western hegemony. The balloon's journey across the ocean has gripped the world's attention. On Friday, the U.S. military said it mobilized fighter jets, but advised President Joe Biden against shooting the balloon out of the sky for fear debris could pose a safety threat. U.S. authorities said the military took custody of the balloon when it entered America's airspace. On Saturday, however, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the balloon, which was being used by China in an attempt to surveil strategic sites in the continental United States, was brought down above U.S. territorial waters. Pentagon also slammed what it called China's unacceptable violation. China has expressed regret, blaming winds for pushing what it called civilian airship into U.S. airspace. Beijing said the balloon was used for meteorological purposes and had unintentionally escaped into U.S. airspace. The incident prompted U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to issue a personal note to his Chinese counterpart condemning Beijing's move.
China's decision to fly a surveillance balloon over the continental United States is both unacceptable and irresponsible. That's what this is about. It's a violation of our sovereignty. It's a violation of international law.
Blinken further added that the U.S. remains committed to diplomatic engagement with China and that he would make a trip to Beijing once conditions are favorable. Some White House allies say postponing Blinken's trip was an overreaction to the incident, particularly because U.S. officials have said that they do not think the balloon was able to gather information that cannot be acquired in other ways, such as spy satellites. In a phone call with his American counterpart, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi said China and the United States should handle occasional individual cases in a calm and professional manner. Wang stressed that China has always strictly abided by international laws and will not accept any groundless conjecture or hype. In the face of unexpected situations, what both sides should do is to maintain steadiness, communicate in time, avoid misjudgment, and manage differences. Meanwhile, the Pentagon said it spotted a second similar balloon flying over Latin America. Beijing already denied the U.S. accusation of spying. It accused U.S. media and politicians of using the recent balloon incident as a pretext to launch a smear campaign against Beijing. The allegation of a suspected spy balloon flying in the sky of Montana has added to concerns that the already heightened tensions between Washington and Beijing would further escalate. Although balloons are a powerful potential surveillance tool, it is odd that Beijing would do something this provocative just before a key U.S. diplomatic trip, especially since China has been pushing to repair relations with the United States post-pandemic. Some in the U.S. say it is very likely that China has been using this technique for a while and that the United States was aware of it, but diplomatically chose not to respond. A U.S. Defense Department spokesman confirmed that such intrusions have happened before, saying it is not the first time that you had a balloon of this nature cross over the continental United States. It has happened a handful of other times over the past few years, to include before this administration. Some believe that the United States is spending a large budget on creating unnecessary hostility with China. Some others reason out that the tensions have flared up in recent years between the two, with Biden declaring that China is America's most consequential geopolitical challenge and competition between the two global superpowers is intense. After all, Washington and Beijing are already at loggerheads over a host of issues. That includes tensions over Taiwan. President Biden has antagonized top Chinese officials by saying on several occasions that the United States would defend Taiwan if China attacked a self-ruled island. One close ally of the administration said that although White House officials have walked back those statements, Biden is intentionally sending a message to China when he makes such pronouncements. But tensions between Washington and Beijing are not limited to that. The two powers have deep differences on other issues as well. The economic war between the United States and China, with the two countries having imposed tariffs on each other's goods, can be named as such. The U.S. presence in the South China Sea also adds to concerns that Washington and Beijing would be facing each other militarily. In the current situation, one small excuse would be enough for the whole world to wage another world war.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, welcome. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haider, and this is Youth Station, by the way. Choo choo kachoo, Youth Station for you.
And, here is Sister Asma.
Sister Asma, it's a pleasure and an honor to have you.
Same in here, of course.
I have an uncle, right? Yeah. He's not going to listen to this, so it's inshallah.
Hopefully,
so it's okay.
He's not going to
he
listen.
He is so rich, like ridiculously rich, right?
Good
and
for him.
And he is stingy as heck.
Oh, Christmas right? Carol.
Oh, yeah, he's a Scrooge. He's a proper Scrooge, right? He has a disability because of which he can't even sleep on his very expensive bed.
Wow.
Isn't that so sad?
So tragic.
Isn't that so ironic?
Yes. But would he wish to give all his money to sleep well?
Probably not.
Yeah, many people want.
If you say
it to many people, then they would say, I wish I had that expensive bed and not a sleep the night.
There are certain people who derive a strange kind of pleasure from just counting how much money they have.
Exactly.
And that becomes their entire existence. Mm-hmm. They don't care if they can't get out of bed. They don't care if they are sick or unhealthy or anything like that. They just want lots of money.
You know, these days, interacting with people makes me so much surprised. And let me say just shocked, not surprised. Yeah. Because if they talk to you and then they start to know that you have accomplished nothing physical, like, I mean, you don't have a house of your own, you don't have a car of your own.
They'll definitely look down at
you. Then they would look
down
at you. Yeah. And they would never consider that, like, you are a person with a dignity, with a character. You know, there was a time when I used to think that character and dignity are all the thing that a man can own. But then as I grew older, then I understood, no. There are some other things that sometimes are cruel to say them, but money is also one of those things that matters so much in nowadays world.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the opposite in the eyes of God. You know, he says...
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. That's the point.
He says in the Holy Quran, وَيْلٌ لِكُلِّ خُمَزَةٍ لُمَزَةٍ أَلَّذِي جَمَعَ مَالًا وَأَدَّدَ. He says, woe be upon every defamer, defrauder, who gathers wealth and just counts it. يَحْسَبُ أَنَّ مَالَهُ أَخْلَدَ. He supposes that this wealth of his will make him eternal.
Yeah.
We don't realize, because it's very difficult for people like with students like us to put ourselves into the shoes and the mind of another person. It's an exercise that we do need to do sometimes in order to understand the other perspective.
Yeah.
They really think that this is it. This is it.
I would say, to some extent, yes, money gives you power. And that's why people love it. Because when you have money, you can control all the people around you. You can even buy people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because even it has been from the first time human beings were created. I guess all the people would long to have more of money in order to have control upon other people. That's why money is so much important.
I think when we give something importance, that's when it actually becomes important. There was a time where we used to trade using goods like food and animals. We used to trade them, or gold, right? And there was a time where we used to trade with coins. Then we moved to banknotes. Those banknotes were backed by gold. And today we go to something like the American dollar, which actually has no worth. It's just a promise.
Yeah.
It's a guarantee.
But it has a lot of effect in people's life, economically speaking.
Because we've given it that importance, right?
Yeah.
It's so strange how we can give things importance when they don't really have importance.
Yeah, I usually think about that as well. How come that a sheet of a paper is going to define my life?
I know. It's just bizarre. So there's this hadith, when we look at the other side as well, for poverty. It says that when poverty enters through one door, iman or faith leaves through the other. So you also have to think about the profound effects that poverty has on people. Poverty can actually cause some people to go astray.
Exactly.
To leave their, and that doesn't mean it's justified, by the way.
Yeah.
Some people think, you know, I'm being ripped off and therefore I'm going to rip off the world. You know, no, that's not the way it works. sorry to say, if you are going through poverty, you need to really buckle down and be patient.
Patience,
with it.
Yeah, it's patience, and then use your intellect in order to get more of money in order to change the situation. I know it sounds easier to talk about it than to practice it, because some things are just easier said than done. But then still, I have seen many people who have been through poverty and then they changed it with too much of hard work. Okay, so I guess right now it's time for us to go for a break. This is Youth Station. We're still here. Brother Muzaffar and I are talking about money. That is very important.
Yeah. Money, money, money. Makes the
money
world go
round. Money talks.
Around. Yeah. Money talks.
Talks
yeah.
loudly. It talks.
Yeah. Money, money, money is so funny in a rich man's world.
Yeah.
You heard that one? Because when you're filthy rich, money is just something funny for you now.
Like
there are times where you can't afford basic necessities. And those times, those necessities, their importance, they go really high in your mind and in your heart. When suddenly Allah opens up the flood doors and you can afford everything, those things are suddenly not important anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Have you been in those situations when you get sick, terribly sick, and then you see that nothing of the thing that you used to think to be important, nothing is important anymore?
Subhanallah.
Yeah, that's very, and even when we go to cemeteries, when we see people are dying and when they are put in those graves, in those little graves, then we see that everything that we're doing in this life, just like trying so hard, running after money, doing too much of hard work from the morning till the night, everything loses its meaning. You know, we think that we're just we're chasing after something that is just worthless.
Why do we do it?
Because we have a life, we have responsibilities, you have kids, you have to feed them. So that's why.
You know, I think it can all be summarized in one hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he says that, look, live in the dunya, don't let the dunya live in you.
Yeah, that's very true.
So, you know, the earth, dunya, is supposed to be where Allah placed it. That's beneath your feet. You know, all these things, money and wealth and fame and popularity, etc., etc., all of that is just supposed to be something that you use to make the world a better place, to please Allah.
And to help others, of course.
To help others.
Because if you have money, and then just as example that you mentioned, your uncle, just let's just talk about a Scrooge, like the Christmas carol that everyone just knows about that. And we've seen a lot of animations like that. They teach us not to be stingy, not to be the kind of a person who is tight-fisted. So if we have money and then I buy houses, I buy cars, and I do not help other people, even the people who are so close to me, my immediate family, even if I do not help them, then what is the worth of that money? If I just keep it for myself, buying things in this material world that is not going to last forever, and that is not mine, of course, because one morning I'd wake up and that day is not going to end up. It's not going to get into the night. I will not leave the other day.
Yeah, I mean, we can totally extend this analogy to all sorts of things. If Allah's giving you a strong body, for example, I've seen so many brothers, they work out in the gym, they've got huge muscles, but then when something happens, they are never there to help in the fight, or if somebody's, if an old lady's being burgled, for example, I don't know. There's people who have transport means. They have a car, but they always come home with an empty car.
So all what you want to say is that if we have a mean, a tool, if we have a blessing, something of my own, an asset, anything, it must come to my help as a thing that I would offer to other people.
That I would serve Allah with.
Yeah. Because his happiness is through the happiness of his obedience. If I help his creatures, then he would get happy.
Youth This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, still, we're talking about money, the thing which is so important, but it shouldn't rule us. I'm not the kind of a person who says money is not important, because when I was a university student, and then when I went to buy books, the books were so cheap, just like cheaper than perhaps a gumming chew.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, things are so different. And then I understood that even if you are going to be an intellectual person, even if you're going to read too much of books, then you need to have money to support you.
I've been through something similar as well.
Yeah.
Remember when Imam Ridha alayhi salam was asked about the month of Ramadan and the philosophy behind it, he said one of the philosophies behind it is so that you would feel the pain of the poor.
To have sympathy.
So you have some sympathy, some empathy for the poor and how it feels like to be hungry.
Exactly.
Without that feeling, how would you ever be able to empathize with them?
Mm-hmm.
You see? So definitely there's that thing there. This, I can't remember which dua it is. I think it's dua Nudba. No, it's a very special dua which is attributed to Imam Zaman alayhi salam. And it's beautiful because you can put yourself into the perspective of Imam Mahdi and see what he's expecting of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that he says is he doesn't say, "Oh Allah, make the poor rich or destroy the rich."
Yeah.
Because there's these two extremes, right?
Yes.
Sometimes I feel like it. I think we should all just rise up against the rich people and just, you know, distribute their wealth. Well, the rest of us will be happy, right?
Yeah.
And there's another perspective where you're just like, I wish all the poor people were rich.
Yeah, this one is good.
The Imam doesn't pray that.
Yeah.
He says, give the poor people patience and satisfaction with less, and give the rich people kind of an understanding and, you know, the ability to give more in the way of Allah.
To be generous.
If you go to the ahadith, it actually says that, look, Allah makes some people poor because if they had been rich, they would have rebelled.
Yeah.
And the opposite is also true. If Allah had made some rich people poor they would have rebelled.
Yeah, that's very true.
You see, so Allah's constantly testing us through the waves that we go through in life.
And at the same time, he knows which is better for us.
Exactly. That's the main point.
Yeah.
So there was this guy and he would always come to the Prophet and he'd pray right in the first row in the masjid on time. And he kept on asking the Prophet that, oh, can you pray that Allah makes me rich? Can you pray that Allah makes me rich? Can you pray that Allah makes me rich? And he keeps on saying that to the Prophet. Eventually, the Prophet said, okay. And he gives him two coins. This guy takes those two coins, they have barakah in them, and then he gets richer and richer and richer. He gets tons of camels, he has a whole business.
And then what happened to him?
He stops going to the masjid. He stops praying on time.
That's why.
Then the Prophet sees him and he says, where have you gone? Why aren't you praying anymore? Why aren't you fasting anymore? Why aren't you doing? And he says, I've got this to look after. I've got a whole business empire to take care of. I've got all these camels. I'm busy, man. The Prophet says, can I have those two dirhams back, those two coins back? And the guy says, those two coins. Back then when he had received them, he was like, wow, two coins. And he was really happy. This time he was like, two coins? Yeah, go ahead. That's
so
nothing.
So money spoiled him totally.
When the Prophet took those two coins back, his barakah also left him.
Wow.
And eventually, you know, he started losing all of his stuff and he became poor again. And he was right back there in the masjid praying on time.
Yeah.
So this is the effect that it can have on some people.
Yeah.
We should be actually thankful that we're not rich.
So that means sometimes when money becomes the focus of our life, we are going to get spoiled.
We become spoiled brats.
Yeah.
And Allah knows what's best for us. Whatever situation that we're in, we should learn to be both patient and thankful.
And make the best out of it, you know?
Yeah, it's not even about the rich people spending a whole lot of money.
Exactly.
If everybody was just paying the zakat and khums, that would sort out all the poverty of the world, pretty much. There would be no poverty anymore.
Exactly. And that's all.
Oh, that's all we have time for. I did have some more points, but inshallah, maybe another time.
Inshallah, yes. If we see you in here, then I could have some more points.
Inshallah.
Yeah. So do not let money to be the center of your attention, the center of your life, because there are some more important things in this world. Money is important, but it's not everything. That's it. Thank you. So until another session, I just say farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.